To most Americans, the Pilgrims of Plymouth, Massachusetts are the iconic inspiration for today's Thanksgiving feast. After the winter of 1620 killed almost half of their people, the colonists formed a relationship with the neighboring Wampanoag tribe, who taught them about fishing, planting, and hunting. By autumn of 1621, the colonists had collected enough food to feed the community through the coming winter. The Wampanoags joined the colonists for a three-day feast in honor of their bounty. The feast probably did not include our modern Thanksgiving staple, turkey. More likely, the colonists and Wampanoags dined on roast goose, along with corn, codfish, and lobster. This 1621 harvest meal is now commonly thought of as the first Thanksgiving. Yet for later generations of colonists, New England days of Thanksgiving had little to do with the 1621 harvest festival. Theirs was a religious holiday, descended from Puritan days of fasting, prayer, and giving thanks to God. Every autumn, the governor of each colony would declare days of thanksgiving for bountiful harvests, victorious battles, or drought-ending rains. In 1777, the Continental Congress decreed that all 13 of America's colonies celebrate a national day of thanksgiving that year in celebration of their victory over the British at Saratoga. By the mid-19th century, many states celebrated the holiday. However, the date could vary by weeks or even months. A determined magazine editor named Sarah Josepha Hale set about establishing a national Thanksgiving Day. She passionately believed that such a day would help unite a nation headed towards civil war. Hale began a one-woman letter-writing campaign, urging politicians to establish an annual day of Thanksgiving. Her efforts were finally rewarded by Abraham Lincoln, who saw the unifying potential of the holiday. In 1863, 4 months after the victory at Gettysburg, he declared the last Thursday of November to be Thanksgiving Day.
All right. Well, this Thanksgiving 2025. And look, as I was preparing to do this, you know I love history, and I almost every year talk about, you know, what happened at that first Thanksgiving. And as I was preparing, I saw so many naysayers. This is the truth about the myth of Thanksgiving, the real truth about what happened and the treatment of the Native Americans, and you fill in the blank. And I was getting a little distressed, and I also found it was harder to find things that were positive about the American Thanksgiving. And so because, you know, our days are limited, our days are numbered, and I think actually the days when we can find a really good information are getting more slender. So today we're going to do it a little differently. I've asked Bruce to join me, and we're going to talk about that Thanksgiving, that first Thanksgiving. We're going to talk about Thanksgiving in general because I just thought it would be fun for all of us. But first, you know, I think God does his best work in the unexpected, the surprises. And sometimes, you know, when you get a surprise or you have all these plans and you get thwarted, you're a little annoyed or aggravated. But then I find that I just have learned through the years to lean into it because I think of maybe God has something in mind here. And certainly that's true when a woman finds out she's pregnant and she's not expecting it. You know, God has done some incredible things. I'll just mention, I'm not sure these are the most famous people in history that we'd want to mention, but there are some very famous people who were the products of unplanned pregnancies. Steve Jobs, a creator of Apple, Andrew Bocelli, Steph Curry, Jack Nicholson, Celine Dion, Oprah Winfrey, all of them were a part of an unplanned pregnancy. And of course, I'm sure there's a long list of others who maybe made different contributions we might appreciate better. But God does wonderful things, but not if the mother goes ahead and takes, eliminates the baby, and that's what we're here to prevent. Preborn shows ultrasound to women who have unplanned pregnancies and sometimes turns their world upside down by showing them that little baby inside of them. It is a miracle when they see it, and it's a miracle when they decide to keep it. And then all kinds of things ensue, and God does his great work. If you'd like to help, an ultrasound is only $28. That's $28. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. Well, we're going to talk about Thanksgiving, Bruce and I, today, and so I hope you'll stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Turkey and dressing and pie and cake.
And fruit salad and whipped cream and cranberries. Gee, I can hardly wait.
Me too.
When we took our places around the table and we were ready, Tom was first.
I am thankful for getting plenty to eat all the time, with extras that count, like cookies and milk after school. Like Mom says, I'm hungry all the time anyway, and if I didn't live in a country where there is plenty to go around, golly! And I'm thankful for the free public library, where I can get books about adventure. Jack London, Richard Halliburton. Gee, the way they tell a story, it's as good as being there yourself. And it's free, with only a library card.
Well, then it was Susan's turn. Susan's a happy-go-lucky kid. You'd never credit her with thinking beyond her dolls, but she got right into the spirit of it.
I am thankful we have what we need to wear. Though Mother says it's hard to keep up with us, we grow so fast. I never thought before how many clothes it takes for all kinds of weather, or how it would be to have to do without the right ones. I'm glad to be able to go to Sunday school, or go to any church I want, any Sunday. I'm thankful for my mother and daddy, that they are here with us, that both of them aren't too worried about things to take time to have fun with us. I'm glad we're a family, that families are still important in America.
I guess Dick, being the oldest, was having some pretty serious thoughts.
I am thankful for being able to get an education, for living where schools, all schools, open their doors to a guy who wants to learn, where school books are studied instead of burned, where a guy's rated by how much he knows, and the community is rated by how well it teaches him. I'm glad I've got a chance to play, batting a ball around once in a while. Stuff like that. I'm glad it's fun, growing up in America.
And as for Mother, seems she's always working, cooking, ironing, tending children, daylight to dark. What does she have to be thankful for?
I am thankful that my children had the privilege of being born safely and of growing up healthy and strong. I'm thankful that I have the privilege of guiding them as they become useful men and women. And I'm thankful for all the things our American system makes possible for the Smiths and the Browns and the Johnsons, for washing machines, hot water out of a tap, and a telephone to call the doctor when one of the family is sick. A car to get Dad to work. Yes, I'm thankful for all the things free people working together can produce.
And now for me. I've got so many things to be thankful for. I'm thankful for this house. It may need a coat of paint, it has a mortgage, but it's ours, a place where we can be together in privacy. For knowing that a knock on our door means nothing to fear. A friend calling, or maybe a bill collector, or a kid selling magazines. You never know what to expect. But you can count on one thing. It's not going to be some political gangster coming to drag one of us off to jail because we believe in freedom. And I'm thankful for my newspaper. Just a few cents worth of printer's ink and paper, but more valuable than any amount of money. Because in it, the editor's got the privilege of printing what he thinks. And I've got the privilege of agreeing with him or not, however the facts strike me. And both of us, the editor and I, have the right to act on our opinions on election day, to vote for the principles we believe in. And finally, I'm thankful for being able to believe, in spite of everything, that somehow, some way, the unity we've got here in the Johnson family will someday spread to men and nations throughout the world. For all these things, we are truly and humbly thankful. Amen.
I wanted you to hear all of that. That was actually recorded in 1951. It was an American family. Oh, yes, it's hokey. But I would put that into context. That is like, 4 or 5 years after the war ends? And so fresh on their minds is Nazism. I don't know if Dad fought. But fresh on their minds is a lack of freedom. And there is an appreciation and love for simple things. I mean, life wasn't so complicated then, was it? They had fought hard, and now they were enjoying the freedoms. And it was just kind of refreshing to hear how thankful they were. And it did remind me of my childhood. It did. So Bruce, my husband, is joining me today. Happy Thanksgiving, honey.
Happy Thanksgiving.
What did you think about that? What struck you about that?
Well, what really struck in my mind was the basics of what they were thankful for. And this is only like 75 years ago. It just shows you the difference in what's happened, how things have advanced, but maybe not advanced in a good way. But the basics, you know, for their church, they're happy. They're thankful for clothing, for a telephone.
For hot water.
For hot water.
In a tap.
Wash their clothes, to be able to call the doctor.
Yeah.
To be able to have books in school.
Right. A library.
It just shows you, really, we could live so much more basic, I guess would be the word. But not that I'm not glad for advancement, but it just shows you what's really important is the basics. Your family, your faith, taking care of people, taking care of your neighbor, things like that.
You know, and also it just struck me the gratitude, because we have an abundance of everything. And we lack gratitude. And that's what I just want to talk about that, because our foundings are all about gratitude. And they go back to a group of people that understood that tremendously. And I just kind of, I'd like to recapture that if it's possible as we approach that beautiful feast that we share together with family and friends, friends like family. And we talk about what we're grateful for. I'd like to just give ideas or inspire to gratitude. I think of the grumpy Thanksgivings. I almost pulled a Babylon Bee. They have a video now of a family trying to eat Thanksgiving dinner post all this stuff where they're trying to get along and they just keep arguing. And it's a lack of gratitude, you know, that causes us to pick at each other and not realize what really is important. So that I think that little awkwardly made little video, that scratchy of 1951, kind of brought us back to that. Well, Bruce, you and I both love history. We love the history of our country. And actually, we recently spent time in Boston and we revisited much of the Revolutionary War that we just loved. But even before that, we had the foundings of this country. And it is such a great story. It is such a great story. And you're a great storyteller. So I think I'm going to kind of turn to you to lay this out and remind me and remind our listeners, which we wish we were with you. Wouldn't it be fun if we were in a huge room or a stadium, we were together and just enjoying each other and sharing and just the fellowship, but we can't do that. So we have to imagine it. Imagine we're around the table today. And Bruce, my sweetheart, is our storyteller as he reminds us of the story of our first Thanksgiving.
Well, and I don't have to start with once upon a time, because this is the truth. That's one of the things that we're really trying to work on, is dispelling so many of these falsehoods that have been perpetuated and are being perpetuated about Thanksgiving. So let's go to the real facts.
Okay.
You know, the Pilgrims are where we start with the Thanksgiving story. Back in 1620, the Pilgrims were from England, and they believed in Jesus Christ, and they were being persecuted because they would not belong to the Church of England, the Anglican Church.
Oh, they just come through the Reformation, the Martin Luther in Germany and the Presbyterian. And so they were fresh from the European Reformation, the beginning of Protestantism.
Yeah. And so they decided they needed to leave England, and they went to Holland. And they went to Holland for 12 years. And one of the primary problems they were having in Holland is that their children were starting to drift away. They were becoming more like the people in Holland rather than the Christians that they wanted to be. So they decided to leave Holland and come to America. And it's providential. They use that word a lot in those times, providence, providential, meaning a work of God.
Right.
And
sometimes they'd say providence meaning God.
Yes, yeah. Yes. You use it as a noun, yeah. And so the Pilgrims commissioned two ships to bring them to America. The Mayflower, which we all know, but another ship called the Speedwell. And they departed England in both ships. The Speedwell developed a leak. They had to return to port. They fixed the leak. The Speedwell and the Mayflower left again. Again, the Speedwell developed a leak. And they returned to port yet again. And on the third try, the Speedwell stayed behind. Well, years later, it was determined that actually there was sabotage being done on the Speedwell.
Somebody didn't want to go.
The sailors on there really did not want to go to America, and they were going to be paid anyway for trying. So it was determined that they had caused the leaks in the ship.
So then they had to all get on one ship, right?
Right. So yep. Now you have 102 people on the Mayflower for which it was definitely not intended to carry that many people.
We just saw it, didn't we?
We did.
We were just on the Mayflower.
We were on it about 2 months ago, and it was amazing to think that they took that little ship across the ocean all by itself.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yes. And made it.
Yes, and made it. And, you know, it was a terrible voyage. Everyone was seasick. They were not really allowed to come up on deck. The crew could come up, but the Pilgrims were basically banished to the inside of the ship, below.
Can you imagine?
And you talk about a providential story. There was a man by the name of John Holland who was one of the Pilgrims. He'd had enough of being down underneath, and he came up on deck, and he got swept overboard by a big wave. And you know, in those days, if you got swept overboard, basically, in those kind of seas, you were just dead, because a lot of people really didn't even know how to swim, and those who did, you know, wearing that kind of clothing and the water being cold and such, you're not going to survive. So he falls overboard, and providentially, there's a rope trailing behind the ship, and he manages to grab hold of the rope, and he is being pulled along in these waves.
And they don't know it.
And finally they realize that he is on this rope, so they pull him in. And he survives. And when they get to Massachusetts, he marries one of the Pilgrim women. And this is what we have as a result of the life of John Holland. He had 10 children. And these are some of the descendants of those 10 children. 3 United States presidents, FDR and George H.W. and George W. Bush. Edith Roosevelt, who was the wife of Teddy Roosevelt. One of the signers of the U.S. Constitution, Nathaniel Gorham. Jeb Bush, who was governor of Florida. Sarah Palin. Also 2 poets, and listen to these names. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Oh, my gosh.
And Henry Wadsworth
Longfellow. Oh, my gosh.
As well as several Hollywood stars.
Their ancestor was the guy on the ropes.
So anyway, it took 2 months to get across the ocean. Can you imagine? You're down in this hold. It's wet. It's cold. You're wearing the same clothes, probably.
The bathroom,
for the most part. The bathroom,
food. Just, oh boy! If you got babies, babies were born. I think on the ship.
They told us that there were babies born while they were en route.
Oh gosh!
So anyway, the original destination for the pilgrims was the Virginia colonies, which had already been established, and in those Virginia colonies, they had already established governance. Well. Despite their best efforts to get south to Virginia, the Mayflower ended up in Massachusetts, where...
It's cold and rocky.
Yeah. And
horrible winters.
And where no governance is established, because the only white people that had been there before were traders that came and left. So the pilgrims decided we have to have a governing document before we even go ashore. So they sat down. They had Governor William Bradford, who became the governor of the province there in Massachusetts, and they wrote what became known as the Mayflower Compact. And this was to guide them once they got ashore. So they make it to shore.
Do you have the text? Are you going to get... Well, that's right. You don't have to read it, but it's...
I can read a bit
of it. Well, it's, you know, it dedicates the land to God. I mean, it's a very blatant Christian document, an agreement on how to have civil society, an agreement between them of how they will behave once they get off the ship and all of that. It's pretty amazing. And one just thing I want to drop in, Bruce, I remember when I was on the radio in Chicago, believe it or not, the Illinois House and Senate voted on a book, a bill called the American Heritage Act, and that bill removed any references to God from any history texts of kids in Illinois, and that was back in the 90s, and that meant the Mayflower Compact was edited.
I was going to say they would have had a hard time with the Mayflower Compact, because here's the beginning of it. Having undertaken for the glory of God and advancement of the Christian faith, and the honor of our king and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these presents, that is, by this legal document and charter, solemnly and mutually, in the presence of God and of one another, covenant and combine ourselves into a civil body politic. Now, if you listen to that, they didn't even realize they weren't in Virginia at that point. They really don't quite know where they are, and that's why they had to come up with this. And
So the document, that was their governance. Again, they're so smart, trying to make sure they have a, because not everybody was a pilgrim. They had other people that were soldiers. I think Miles Standish was a soldier and all of these other people. So they had to make sure they had an agreement on rules and how they would live together, and everyone agreed and signed it.
Yes, and obviously there was much more to the compact than what I read, but it basically laid down the rules, and everyone agreed these are going to be the rules. As you say, it was signed, and they went ashore. And again, here we have Providence. Where they went ashore was the former land where a very hostile Indian tribe, the Patuxents, had resided. The year before, there had been a plague that went through that tribe and wiped them out. So basically, they're coming ashore where, had they come a year earlier, they probably would have all been slaughtered.
You know, Bruce, I found, as I was prepping, I found this video by a storyteller. His name is Seth Adam Smith, and he tells the story of that barren place where this tribe had disappeared. It's a beautiful story, and so let's let him tell it. This is clip 2.
So there's a story that I really love from American history, and it's really the story that saved America in a lot of ways. And I mean that in like a literal sense. It literally saved America. But it also saved America in a figurative way later. So years ago, back in the 1600s, long before the Europeans had actually really settled in the New World, a young Native American man was kidnapped by Europeans. His name was Squanto. He was taken from his homeland and sold into slavery in Spain. Now, the history or the account is a little vague about what happened to him after that point. But after several years, Squanto somehow, miraculously, found his way back home. And after all of this struggle, after all of this pain, after all of this heartache of fighting to get back home, he gets there to the spot where he had lived, and everything's gone. His family, his friends, everything gone. And what historians believe is that they were wiped out by a mixture of famine and plague. And so you have to put yourself in Squanto's position, right? He was taken from his homeland, and after all of this struggle, he comes back home. Undoubtedly, he's thrilled to be back home, and then he just finds, literally, the land is covered in bones. The bones of his people. Well, he joins with a neighboring tribe. And years later, another group of Europeans come to the New World. And we know these people as the Pilgrims. And they were actually trying to get to a very different spot of land in America. But they end up, because of storm and misdirection and really confusion, they didn't know what they were doing. They end up exactly at the homeland of Squanto. In fact, William Bradford says something to the effect of building their community on the bones of a Native American people that had died out before they had gotten there. Well, as they built up this community that we know as Plymouth, things weren't going so well. And during the winter, a lot of people died. There was about 100 people to begin with on the Mayflower, and by the time the winter had ended, there were about 50 people. And you have to put yourself in the Pilgrim's shoes now. And you think you're doing God's will, you think you're doing the right thing. You're trying your best to move forward in life, and it's just not working. So either they have to get out of there, or they're just going to die. That's the honest truth. All of them will die if somebody doesn't help them. And at the close of the winter, a miracle happened. A young man walked into camp and spoke to them in English. Now, it was broken English. It was actually a messenger sent by Squanto, basically to say a few words, tell them, you have to talk to Squanto, he knows English. And then later the Pilgrims met with Squanto, who spoke more or less fluent English because he had lived as a slave in Spain and then eventually in England.
Well, that's the first part of Seth Adam Smith's story about Squanto. But Bruce, I just thought that was a sweet telling. I know you're going to tell part of it. So can you embellish that? I mean, they come to the same spot, which is providential. And so,
yes, actually the first Native American that they ran into was a gentleman named Samoset. And Samoset came into their village. He was the messenger that was referred to by the person in the tape. And Samoset advised the Pilgrims, if you run into Indians here, they will probably be hostile because we've had problems in the past between white men that came there as trappers and the Indians. And as the narrator said, Samoset spoke some English. He spoke broken. And what he explained is that he had learned the English language from explorers and fishermen who had come frequently or occasionally to their coast. And so what happened is when Samoset came into the village of the Pilgrims, they treated him as a friend. And Samoset said, he made a promise. He said, I'm going to bring back some people from my neighboring tribe. I'm going to butcher this, the Wampanoag tribe. And sure enough, a few days later, Samoset returned, and not only did he bring some of the people from the tribe, he actually brought the chief, Massasoit. And at that point, Massasoit, on behalf of his tribe and some of the Pilgrim Fathers, sat down and wrote out a peace treaty because they could tell they were going to get along. And one of the people that was in that group that was brought by Samoset was Squanto. And as he said, Squanto, now again, we're talking about providential. Squanto had been kidnapped probably 30 years earlier by white men that had come to that area as trappers. And he, as they said, he went to Spain where he was a slave. Some Catholic friars noticed him. They started discipling him. And they eventually, I think, bought him out of slavery. We don't know exactly how, but then Squanto goes to England and was there for several years, learned English, became very acquainted with the ways of the Western world. And then, and again, here's Providence. He boards a ship and comes back to his area where his tribe had been. And as the narrator said, they had all died from a plague and from starvation.
Wow, can you imagine?
So now think of this. This is not just the stars aligning. This is Providence. You have a man who is taken as a slave. He should probably hate all white men at that point. He's taken as a slave. He's taken to Spain, and he goes to England. And this is in the 1600s where, you know, travel was very rough. So he ends up in England. Then he comes back and is in the exact spot where the Pilgrims come ashore, which, again, they had not intended to come ashore there.
That's amazing.
That's providential.
Amazing. Well, so they develop a friendship, but then isn't it Squanto who helps them? They didn't know how to even survive, you know, how do you cook? I mean, they come in on a rocky shore. Yeah. They came from Holland. Holland is more fertile than that, not quite as rough as that. So how, you know, with tools, all of that, what, do you know what that part of the story?
Well, as you remember when we were on the Mayflower and they talked to us about the area, that part of Massachusetts is very rocky. You know, it's basically a shoreline. And it was very unsuitable for, at that point in America, primarily the people were growing tobacco. But you can't eat tobacco, so the pilgrims are they're in danger of starving to death. Squanto knows how to farm the land. He, with some of the people from the pilgrims, sat down and he taught them how to plant corn and I think some beans. And they had enough with supplementing it with hunting to get them through the winter.
The first winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then so it was that winter, and then the following fall when they had harvest, that's when they had the famous meal of 1621, right?
Right. The pilgrims had been in Plymouth for approximately 1 year from when they landed until the next year after they were done harvesting. And they were getting along well with the Indians, and they invited the Indians to come for a feast. And Massasoit brought he brought 90 warriors.
90,
more of
oh,
them.
Oh, so that table needed to be a little bit bigger in the pictures, right?
And they had apparently an absolute wonderful time. The Indians stayed for 3 days. You know, I think they thought this
food
was going to be a dinner, and it turns into 3 days. They started having athletic competitions. They were running. They were wrestling. You know, they were probably having, you know, skill competitions. And I think of it, it's kind of ironic that you think of football now. I mean, Thanksgiving now, and there's football contests. And as families, we often go outside and, you know, play against each other in games, things of that nature. After you've loaded up on
without
turkey.
Even knowing that Squanto and the rest of them were doing athletic activities. That is really very cool. Part of our DNA, I guess you could say.
Yes, I would say that.
Well, back to Seth Adam Smith. He has, you know, you talked about it being a miracle in Providence, and Seth observed the same thing. Let's listen.
And this is a miracle on so many levels, because Squanto, at that point, taught them how to grow corn, how to survive in that area, right? That's a miracle by itself. He saved their lives physically, but there's more to it than that. I mean, this is a man who was literally kidnapped by the English and sold as a slave. He had everything taken away from him. The English then come back to his homeland and settle on it and take it all again. Right? So you have to imagine him looking at these people and seeing them build on the bones of his people. This is a person who has all the reason in the world to hate the English and say, you know what? I'm just going to let them die like they let my people die. But he didn't. He forgave. And that's a miracle. Because had he not forgiven them, had he not helped them, this nation wouldn't exist. I mean, you and I and the people watching this video, we probably wouldn't exist. Because the pilgrims, after surviving that experience because of Squanto, they were able to send communication back to England and say, we can live here now. And that began the migration of Puritans into New England, really. That's what sparked it. That's why we celebrate Thanksgiving and Plymouth Rock and the Pilgrims. And we celebrate it because of Squanto, really.
So that's Seth Adam Smith again, the storyteller. Bruce, you know, no other country has a story like our story. I mean, I could go back, we could talk about Columbus. There's so many things to say about him and how providential that was. But every step of it, whether it's the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, it's just the miraculous intervention of God in various ways. Even the winning of the Revolutionary War was nothing short of a miracle. And surviving the Civil War was nothing short of another miracle. But there were some other miracles that you mentioned that happened, just some other unusual things. It'd be nice to hear about some of those.
Well, you know, one of them happened on the ship on the way over. We'd already talked about the problems that the Speedwell had. Well, the Mayflower developed a problem when they were in the middle of the ocean, and that is the main beam, which really holds the whole ship together, cracked.
Oh.
And started to cave in.
Oh.
And, you know, it would have only been a matter of time until it would have snapped and the ship would have gone under. Well, for some reason, again, providential, the Pilgrims had a printing press when they were back in England, and they were no longer allowed to use it after some point because of censorship. But for whatever reason, they brought the printing press with them on the boat. With all the other things they needed to bring, they bring this printing press. Well, if you have seen old printing press, you know, you pull a handle and it has what's called a jack screw that brings down the printing press to paper to make the impression. Well, it just so happens, you know, again, providential, that this jack screw was exactly what was needed to put this beam back in place. So they use the jack screw to jack back up the beam, lash it together, and it survived, you know, it survived the entire trip.
Wow, yeah. That is so cool. And then, of course, there's a lot of stories about the interpersonal relationships, who got married, who didn't, and it's just a great story. And I just commend, we should commend the book you're using, because it's published by Wall Builders.
Yes, it's a book by David and Tim Barton, called The American Story, The Beginnings. I absolutely love this book. It is a book, you know, the critics will say, oh, that's, you know, the American story by people that are conservatives and, you know, dreamers. But we actually had a conversation with David Barton as to the research that he and his son did to create this book. And It's an unvarnished, I think, an unvarnished storytelling of America, but it just so happens that it makes America and its beginnings look very good.
Well, there are so many diaries. There's stuff, we still have Miles Standish, just look at the Mayflower Compact. They kept records. I think they had a diary on board. We have records of what actually happened. So this is not somebody's supposition. And it's a beautiful story. It is American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, no other country in the world has a story like this.
Well, and I think there's some other things that we really need to bring out. And one of the myths going around now is that the white man took all of this property from the Native Americans, never compensated them in any way, basically just kicked them off their land. And if you look at the research that was done, that is absolutely not true. Any property that the Pilgrims ever acquired, there is basically a bill of sale, and there was a negotiation had, and a price was agreed upon. It was written up, and that kind of compensation was given. Also, there is no record of any Pilgrim ever killing any Native American. That doesn't mean other people didn't kill Native Americans, but no Pilgrim did. Another thing that I really found fascinating is two things, actually. One is Squanto and Samoset, when they died, they wanted to be buried the way Christians were. They
really?
Yes, they asked. Governor Bradford, I believe, presided over the burial, I think it was of Samoset, who said he wanted to be laid to rest with the God of the white man, and that he believed in him. Yeah. And the other thing that is really relevant to today, it just shows you how nothing ever, never, you know, things stay the same no matter how much we change, and that is that the original thought of how they would share things amongst the Pilgrims when they got to wherever they ended up, which was Plymouth, is that it would be basically a system of socialism. In other words, whatever was killed by the hunters, whatever was provided by the farmers, whatever was created by, say, the barrel makers and the shoe cobblers, whatever was produced or created was going to go into basically one big pot, and it would be divided equally amongst the people of the colony. Well, it didn't take long for certain people. You know, it really surprises me that they were this way after having endured all of this hardship, but people being people, some people decided, you know what? I don't have to work. I'm going to get whatever I'm going to get whether I work or not. And the leaders recognized this, and they said, we are not going to have this anymore. From now on, if you want something, you trade with somebody. You make something, and you trade it for what the other person has. And we're not going to have this socialism, because they had seen it happen in Virginia also. And even in those days, it was very apparent socialism doesn't work, because people are people.
People are people. And it happened, of course, in the first century church, too. They tried it for a time, and then finally Peter says, if you don't work, you don't eat. And so that kind of ended it. Well, that's really interesting, Bruce. Let's take a very brief break. And I have one more thing. Seth Adam Smith brings a historical perspective that goes down through the generations that I want to play. And then we'll say goodbye on this Thanksgiving 2025 right after this.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
There are babies in their mother's wombs who need our help right now. And as the year comes to a close, and it is coming to a close, it's coming too quickly, really. Your tax-deductible donation can be the difference between life and death. Would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your gift of $5, $10, or $15,000 would be used to save countless babies for years to come. It could buy an ultrasound machine. There's so many things they could do with that money, not designated, because, of course, they do a lot more than just provide ultrasound. If you would like to help in a big way at the end of the year, if you're able and you have the money, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Back to the beginning, I said this was a miracle that saved America, but it was also a story that saved America. And what I mean by that is that hundreds of years after this event occurred, America was engaged in the Civil War. And it wasn't just a battle about states' rights and slavery and anti-slavery, it was that. But it was also a battle for the soul of America, right? What does America represent? What kind of country are we? Because you could make the argument that America started in Jamestown, Virginia, right? That is where the origin story of America is. And that story is very much commercial, right? It's about growing tobacco. It's about slavery. It's about building America as a very commercial enterprise, right? Doing whatever you can to make money. But then you could also make the argument that America began in Plymouth, right? That was the origin of America. And if you make that case, then you include the story of the Pilgrims and Squanto. And Abraham Lincoln took that story, that origin story, and said, "This is America." And that story has become our story as a nation, right? He said, "Let's celebrate Thanksgiving," because when the Pilgrims made it through that horrible, terrible winter, they gathered together later and celebrated what we call the first Thanksgiving. Obviously, it looked a little different than what we celebrate now, but the idea is very much the same. Gratitude to God, very grateful to be alive, and celebrating with people whom you might not agree with, people who you forgive, people who you embrace and bring in and share a table with. This is what Abraham Lincoln put his life on. He literally gave his life for this idea of America. In fact, in his second inaugural address, he said, "With malice towards none and charity for all." Right? And they're engaged in this civil war. They're wrapping up these really intense hatreds and rivalries. And he says, "Forgive, let's let it go. And let's all sit down at the table and celebrate our common humanity." Right? And so it really is a story that saved America.
All right, Seth Adam Smith, the storyteller. I just thought that was a beautiful thing. And Bruce, as we go into Thanksgiving, we're going to be with friends like family. And to all of you, if you're with your family, I would just challenge you to think about deep gratitude. Let your gratitude go deep. Think deeply about the things that you are really grateful for. And because we have so much to be grateful for, we need to thank God. And we need to remind people, too, that this is a time. I think there's a notion now that Thanksgiving is just about being thankful, but not to God. It's thanks to God. Abraham Lincoln was very clear about that in his second inaugural. We must be thankful to the author and creator, the one that's responsible for all of this. Any last thoughts, honey?
Well, as I get older, I think Thanksgiving means more and more to me. I think back to my parents. I think back to family members that I don't have anymore that I used to spend time with at Thanksgiving. I think to what you were just saying, that we are just so blessed. You know, every time you start to complain, you should check yourself. And I'm as guilty of this as anybody. We have so little to complain about.
Yeah.
And so much to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord.
Good, honey. Yes, the Lord Jesus, we do thank you for all of your blessings. Thank you for our listeners. Thank you for the privilege of life, for health, for another day of freedom. We thank you and we praise you in Jesus' name. Well, happy Thanksgiving, all of you. And I want to remind you, Preborn is our sponsor. We couldn't do this without them. And if you'd like to help make it possible for us to do the show and help save babies at the same time, what could be better? Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's Thanksgiving edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.